Welcome to FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. This show offers an intellectual discussion on technologically enabled disruption, because investing in innovation starts with understanding it. To learn more, visit arc-invest.com.
ARK Invest is a registered investment advisor focused on investing in disruptive innovation. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions. It does not constitute either explicitly or implicitly any provision of services or products by ARK. All statements made regarding companies or securities are strictly beliefs and points of view held by ARK or podcast guests and are not endorsements or recommendations by ARK to buy, sell, or hold any security. Clients of ARK Investment Management may maintain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
From ARK Invest, this is FYI, the four-year innovation podcast. I'm Brett Winton. With me, I have Charlie Roberts. Charlie's our chief investment strategist.
Hello, very well, thank you.
We've got a great show today. We are talking to Dmitry Shevelenko, who is the chief business officer for Perplexity AI, the question answering AI agent. And we really think it's an interesting product. And you're going to get to hear a little bit about how Perplexity is approaching the world of AI. Charlie, what do you use Perplexity for?
And not to mention the recent unsolicited offer for Chrome that comes up.
That's true. They also offered $34 billion for Chrome that I'm sure Google just loved hearing that lowball bid. Charlie, have you tried the Comet browser yet?
I have to confess, I have not tried the Comet browser. I'm excited to try it now. I actually didn't realize it was fully out and ready. I think I might have put myself on a waiting list at some point, but I need to go back and be ready and have a go. I do use Perplexity, mainly for places where I just want answers and interesting ability to double down on a line of thinking without having to do a ton of cognitive heavy lifting. So various research questions, various sometimes coding things, and I'm excited to go back in via Comet and explore it in its newest guise.
It's interesting, the analyst team here seems to prefer Perplexity for earnings calls. As in, like, I'm back and forth. I use ChatGPT for kind of more coding, general kind of deep thinking, and then Perplexity for quick answers. But then Perplexity is both quicker to embed kind of transcripts and 10Ks and 10Qs. And so then provides, I think, better kind of also access to the underlying metrics for financials. Do you think that there is room in the future for there to be like multiple of these AI, call it agentic AI systems that people will use?
It's very interesting how much commoditization so far that we've seen among the frontier models, or at least depending on what you believe of the benchmarks and people's experience using them all. There does seem to be the potential for a sort of agentic breakout where systems become so good and by being used so much, generate so much data so fast that they get on a steeper part of the curve. And that's my belief, is that that's happening and it's going to start happening more, especially when we start getting enough data to really have reinforcement learning kick in terms of action tokens that people are using as the interface with browsers and what have you. So I think there will be a handful of these, but possibly not many, many. That would be one worldview. I do think Perplexity, one of the things that they've always impressed with is just the ability to productize, which to the extent that a human is making the ultimate end decision, even if a set of agentic systems are making a lot of the intermediate decisions, the human who is going to commission the end agent, as it were, in this case Perplexity, is going to want a good product to interact with. And it's surprising how far behind often folks are. And one would think that productization layer may also get commoditized. That hasn't really been what we've seen, at least thus far. And so I think, you know, potentially Perplexity is in this hallowed ground where, by having productized so well, there's now a real user following and that becomes self-fulfilling at some level in a world where data through time matters so much. That's my belief.
I'm a little torn on this one, but like I could imagine there being a handful of these and there are like people who are dedicated to Perplexity and that's the one they use, and people that use ChatGPT and people that use Grok. And, you know, there's a distribution of share amongst them, but then there are hardcore users. I think it's a little harder for me to imagine people swapping back and forth,
right?
Unless they have like a corporate one and a personal one that they keep separate.
I think a lot depends on how portable is one's context. We're seeing a couple of companies coming through which are purporting to make portable context, so to make that switching cost low. However, the reality is probably it's not. It's in the interest of the model owners and the builders to own that context. It's a little bit like saying, well, wouldn't it be nice if you could have a portable social media and you could just switch off your Facebook and just move somewhere else with the same graph? And of course you can't. And it's probably going to be like that, or even more sticky, is my suspicion. And yeah, I think to me, it's going to be some hybrid, right, between portability and just friction. And if new products are launched, well, you know, what we've seen obviously with ChatGPT as the fastest product ever, I believe, to 100 million users, is some of these things are so good, they just auto-distribute to some extent. So if someone cracks some agentic solution that is just so defrictioning for people's lives, I do think we'll see more of those near vertical takeoffs. And I think Perplexity has a good shot, but then, you know, potentially so do oncoming startups in building that those vertical takeoff ramps.
Just even they bid on Chrome, thinking about that Chrome is 65% share of the browser market, which, you know, ostensibly, if you do the numbers on Google's users and kind of like how much revenue they have to pay out to Apple for Safari default distribution, this is a software, a piece of software that to Google is worth $400 to $600 billion-ish. And there's no, it does not seem from a first principles perspective that there's a reason that 65% of the browser market should sit in one browser. As in, you would think there would be all kinds of browsers that are people are using out there. And so it just suggests to me that in AI space, where there are a lot more kind of logical levers by which these companies will kind of consolidate and be useful in all kinds of contexts for people, that you are going to have kind of like hyper-concentrated markets, at least in some sets of capabilities.
Right. And we'll talk about that in the discussion. And, you know, I do think, depending on the user, a lot of what people use the interface and the browser. I think the browser as we knew it is not necessarily dead, but is really going to have some evolutionary reckonings, it feels to me. And, you know, especially as we, in an agentic world where a lot of what we stare at the screen for, I don't know, anecdotally, I probably spend half of my time staring at the screen for stuff I prefer to just not do. And then the other half is maybe reading papers or looking at videos or something that I still would do. But a lot of that is just not that. And in an agentic world, I would just love to have that abstracted away and just interact with a line or two of voice, and then it's just done and it comes back with the results. And I think Perplexity is positioning itself well for that future. But the world is changing faster than ever before. So
yeah, well, enjoy the conversation. It definitely gives you some insight into Perplexity's positioning. And I think that there is there is clearly like a set of companies that are out there trying to create the future user interface, and Perplexity is one of them. And we use the product internally, and I use it personally. I think it's a great product, and we'll see what's to come next for them.
And a quick last word on BCI. We will talk about that a bit in the discussion. There was a paper reported in Nature a few days ago that they had managed to have a BCI system with a password that could be thought, and that would lead to access or not. So this side is also moving very, very fast.
Okay. It's BCI, brain computer interface. So Charlie, like, we're having this discussion, then suddenly Charlie's trying to plug in Dimitri's brain into the internet. We'll see.
I'm seeing any other ways people could get past his LinkedIn guardians.
All right, enjoy the conversation. Dmitry Shevelenko, Chief Business Officer at Perplexity AI, everybody's favorite answering engine. Welcome to FYI, the Four-Year Innovation Podcast. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Excited for the conversation.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So I think of kind of these AI companies, of which Perplexity is obviously one, as having maybe four or five different monetization angles that they're developing, working on. There's the API business, probably not as relevant to Perplexity, though I actually have used your APIs. There's kind of a subscription business. There's an indirect monetization business, which is maybe emerging, you know, advertising or transaction consummation. Then there's an agent business and there's an enterprise business. Lay out what Perplexity is doing in the marketplace here and which of those is kind of existential to you versus like maybe you added on later?
I think the, for us, our primary sources of revenue today are consumer subscriptions and enterprise subscriptions. And ultimately, you know, our focus is helping knowledge workers be their best selves, both in their personal life and their professional life. And so we're, we ultimately think of how we extract economic value is if we help people with their most important decisions, and they view Perplexity as a trustworthy, accurate source of answers and guidance, we're creating tremendous value for our users, right? And so I think subscriptions are, what we like about subscriptions is they are maximally aligned with what's best for the user because they're paying for it. And, the market kind of gives you that feedback of whether they're finding the value or not. And I think API, like we have our Sonar models, is growing really fast. For us, it's really a validation that the work we're doing with our index and our core search infra, to power our own product, that it is at the bleeding edge because others find it very useful as well. And we see many great startups and bigger enterprises kind of adopting that. But I think, the long-term frame on monetization is, don't do something that is helpful in the short term that sets you up to lose trust or have misalignment with your users in the long term. And I think, Google is kind of like, a great example of that risk, right? Where they built the world's most lucrative business model, and it's an amazing business. But now as the internet becomes more agentic, that misalignment is becoming more clear and evident.
Traditionally, or at least in internet land, all of these business models that emerged on the back of free services where they're monetizing on the back end in some way, maybe even deferring monetization to figure it out. AI seems different. We're all happily paying for these services because they're magically amazing. But do you think that's like the long-term monetization stance that Perplexity sits in? Or does kind of like the ad revenue business or transaction consummation business become a more important part and maybe even a majority part of the monetization story?
Again, I think some of these concepts are ripe for reimagining in an agentic internet. We've started experimenting with Perplexity Pro perks. So, for example, if you book a hotel natively through Perplexity, if you're a pro subscriber, you get 10% discount on that. And effectively, what we're doing is taking the commissions that are standard practice in hotel booking, and instead of us capturing that as ad revenue, we transfer that value to users. And so, if you're a free user, using Perplexity, you see this kind of, hey, upgrade to pro and you get 10% savings on a hotel booking, which is for most hotel bookings, much greater than $20 a month. And so we're now capturing value through increased subscription acquisition retention that in an earlier version of the internet would have been ad revenue, right? So I think these categories are actually more fungible. I think Costco in many ways is not an AI company. Pioneered how you create value by aligning with what's best for your customers rather than having, more of an extractive relationship. And so I think there's a lot to learn there.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about even Amazon Prime. It's not something that initially existed, as a category, but it's clearly been for their retail business and their broader strategic ambitions, actually a really important tool that they've deployed. We're now kind of everybody's an Amazon Prime member because it just feels like a better deal. And maybe it is because then you get sucked into using the service.
Yeah. And I think if you kind of zoom out and like try to imagine, the end state of a lot of these interactions, it is going to be more of an agent to agent world where you're going to have, hopefully it's going to be Perplexity representing you as a user, your personal agent that's out there in some sort of virtual environment, effectively negotiating for you with the AI agents from the supply side, from the merchants and vendors, and Ultimately, it'll be different bundles of personalization, you know, exclusives, discounts and offers, right? And so I think the Pro Perks, it's really a stepping stone to that, where this starts to become much more about you as an individual rather than, you know, Perplexity Pro as a, you know, class of people.
Who is it that gets really most disrupted by that, do you think, Dimitri, that has a good position in the current way that things are happening? Like who is really blasted away by that agentic move, and who do you think will be well prepared?
Well, I think in general, like link-based performance advertising matters less when your agent is kind of clicking around for you and doing that research. The reason we're not trying to build a competitor to AdWords isn't because we you know, think Google has built a much better product. I mean, you know, frankly, they've invested so much in AdWords, nobody can catch up on the algorithmic side. But it just seems like that general kind of category of flow and customer acquisition funnel is going to become less relevant. And so I think that certainly, I think kind of that search-based link ads feels like it's pretty ripe for disruption. And on the other hand, you know, like social feeds with ads inside of them, those don't feel like they'll be changed at all, right? Because the desire to kind of consume a feed of social content, that doesn't, you're never going to ask your AI to go like scroll through Instagram for you, because you're doing that, you know, for yourself, not, you know, for some objective kind of, you know, research function.
You might use your AI as a friend as opposed to your Instagram friend. So you might get displaced just because, you know.
Well, I think the social feed, again, it becomes maybe an AI social feed, right? And that's the core dynamic of like interacting with a feed of social-ish content. You know, you're still going to have a lot of page views kind of, you know, tied to that sort of behavior.
Do you see AI actually helping or hurting social media as we know it?
I mean, social media is such a broad catch-all that I think there'll be pockets of it that I certainly think the relationship fans have with creators that they admire, that feels pretty resilient to anything happening in AI. Now, again, the creators might themselves be using a lot more AI, but the core of the fan relationship is still going to be tied to whoever's prompting that initial seed, right? And like, yeah, so even AI artists, like there's still going to be a human, you know, you go deep enough, there's a human at the base of whatever triggered the creative act. And that's what people are going to have the fan and follow relationship with. And so yeah, I think social, like I think the whole sycophant era that we've been in, maybe like, you know, in the last, like, you know, I think about years when, you know, GPT really like tuned the system prompt to like, you know, optimize for that type of engagement. I think at some point it becomes pretty shallow. It's almost similar to gaming in that like you'll want to engage with a certain persona and then it gets kind of tiring and then you're going to want something else. And yeah, there's a reason we don't do it, which is like what I was saying before about trust and accuracy is like, you know, if you're trying to play that long game, you can't also do that and then optimize for the kind of sycophant engagement bump that you get if you're just like, you know, overly encouraging people.
How do you think about the consumer enterprise? Like there clearly is a bridge between like the consumer use and the enterprise use. And you frame it as like, you're trying to make knowledge workers more powerful in their personal and professional lives, which as a knowledge worker, it's like, yes, I need to have like some kind of like synchronization here. I need my apps and I mean, my calendars all to be synchronized and everything else. But doesn't that mean that Perplexity has to live on the consumer side in some way, or is it okay to kind of like just be more like the objective professional boundary side of the AI game?
Consumers, when they make important decisions, they also want an objective assistant. You know, you guys probably know some people that are very wealthy and they have a personal assistant for their personal life, and then they have an executive assistant for their work life. I don't think people necessarily want different attributes out of them. They're just probably like less embarrassed about some of the things they'll ask their personal assistant versus what they'll ask their kind of executive assistant in the office. But you still want both of them to give you the best possible answer. And so I don't think there's a conflict there. I think you obviously want people to not be embarrassed. Yeah, and that's why you invest a lot in privacy, and like, you know, we don't resell any of the data or any of the prompts or anything like that, that people come to ask Perplexity.
My experience with agents so far in current state has been, I would say, quite mixed, as in I try all the tools. You know, I use Perplexity and ChatGPT and everything. And the coding side agents are kind of a mess. They seem to always overdo what they're trying to do. And I've like found I have to dial them back a lot. I asked ChatGPT's agent tool to buy a missing Lego piece for me. It took about 2 hours and it managed to do it, but it was, you know, mixed. What does Perplexity need to do in terms of like distribution, data collection, kind of like R&D, or what are the ingredients you need to deliver a good kind of agentic experience to consumers? Is it close the loop on commercials, on transactions? Like what needs to be thrown into the pot to make this thing work?
Have you had a chance, Brett, to play around with Comet yet, our new browser?
Yes, so Comet is my default browser, but I don't have Riverside working on it yet. So it's not, I'm in Chrome right now, but I promise I have Comet right over here on this other screen.
So funny enough, I have, Riverside is running in Comet for me. So we're...
it's a permissions issue. It's a permissions with my camera issue. Where
got
I,
it. You know, okay, anyways.
Corporate IT.
So Comet is our, Perplexity's web browser. And I think in many ways, that's a lot of these like transaction-based flows. It's about doing them client-side, where a lot of the power gets unlocked. So I have like a new behavior where like I see, you know, I'm scrolling my X feed on the browser. And then in the past, like somebody would mention a book and I'd always like forget to like take action. And I can literally just, you know, open up the sidecar system and be like, hey, buy the Kindle version of this book for me. And what Comet is able to do is, you know, we're acting as your agent. So we open an invisible tab. You're already logged into Amazon, right? Like the thing that's powerful about browsers, you already have your cookies. So we're not like, you don't have to give us, you know, any special credential. We're not going in and kind of going some side route. It's your account. We're finding that book, you know, adding it to the cart. And if you say purchase it, just going through and taking that action. I actually did, you know, a really fun agentic action before our recording, which is, and I do it often, is I said, hey, I'm doing this thing with Arc tomorrow. All the people that are on the calendar invite that I'm not yet connected to on LinkedIn, please add them. And I think Charles, you and me were already connected, but Brett, I think you probably received I don't know if you want to check your LinkedIn invites, but you should have gotten something this morning.
I go on LinkedIn every 6 months or so. So
okay.
Four and a half months from now, I will say yes, we'll be connected.
Well,
yes,
actually,
yes, I need the Comet browser.
So I've got the perfect Comet use case for you. The other end of it, so I use it for sending, but I also have Comet, like every week or so, I'm like, hey, Comet, go through all of my pending LinkedIn invitations I've received and accept the top 5% that are most interesting.
Ooh,
and,
that seems useful.
Yeah, and it's kind of, because like, I mean, at this point, it's, not like it's a stupid flex to make, but like, it's a pretty, I get inundated with requests. I would have been flattered earlier in my career when I was like very excited when I got one. And so it's great to kind of have AI assist with it. The neat thing about that example is it was the chaining together of, it opened my Google Calendar to look up the Arc thing, right? I didn't have to like say your names or even know who you guys were, and then it chained it with that other action of the LinkedIn, right? The other thing I often do is like, you know, with books, is somebody is like, you know, I'm getting up to speed on a topic, and I just say, what's the best book on X? You know, go buy the Kindle version for me. And that's where it's going to combine, you know, Perplexity's answer to what the best book is, right? Which, you know, we'll use many different sources. And then with that kind of agentic follow through, And the interesting thing about these examples is there's a through line in the history of the internet, which is when you make it a lot easier to do something, people just do a lot more of it. And you know, I was at Uber for 4 years, and certainly, you know, people, you know, despite COVID, like, you know, I think Uber and the advent of ride sharing gets people out of their house more, you know, despite kind of all the social, the people, many people are kind of locked into video games and other things. And so I think part of what you're going to see with the agentic internet is it's not just like replacing behaviors. You're going to see in certain categories just a lot more. And for us, we kind of put that under the broader theme of curiosity, right? Like if we make it really easy to learn and like go and like, you know, operate in the world, people will just have the confidence and courage to go do more things. And that starts to get really exciting.
Did you interrogate your comment as to what it finds interesting for all of our listeners who want to add you on LinkedIn and want to land in the top 5%?
Yeah, that's a good question to ask. It's like, hey, reflect on the attributes of who made the cut. And obviously you could, you know, you could run a task where you give it a very specific prompt of like, hey, look, you know, prefer people who wrote custom messages and, you know, prefer people who don't, sell software services, because that tends to be a pretty annoying category of LinkedIn invitation that you receive. So
my heuristic is just if they never heard of them, but they know more than 5 or 10 mutuals. It's pretty
exactly.
Easy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's an easy one. Like anybody with more than 50 mutuals is like an auto accept. So you could you could do that. And yeah, I'll see what it reasons were the patterns of the recent acceptances.
It's interesting to think about the browser as like a useful source for context, as in kind of like, or it's not even shoving something in the context window. You're, as you're describing, an agent that then has to ask you for the username and password. It's like, oh, okay, how much am I really saving here, where it's like browsing around and then it comes back to you versus being able to kind of like set it and it actually fully completes the action. How do you think about in terms of, okay, and so you all, and actually as chief business officer, you might have been tip of the spear here, but threw out a lowball bid of $34-ish billion for Chrome. What is the, like, if I had to disaggregate the browser as useful for kind of just distribution, as in I'm getting people coming to my front end as Google uses it, versus kind of having that context already embedded, versus the data that you get from how users use the browser or navigate through websites generally, how do you think about the relative importance of those categories in terms of the browser?
I think it's hard to, I think it's really what makes it so valuable is the unison of those three. I mean, I think those are pretty good kind of, it is both the front page to your computer. It is the operating system for your desktop. And it has, you know, permissions to like really take action in your life, right? So I think I do find this like, what are the characteristics of a great executive personal assistant is a pretty good mental model for where we want to, you know, take Perplexity. And inevitably at some point you have to share with your EA like payment credentials and things like that. In many ways, a Comma is an even more secure way of doing that. And to the point about like, you know, there's certain questions like you're going to be embarrassed to ask an EA that you will not be embarrassed about asking an AI, right? And I'll embarrass myself as like whenever I'm traveling, like with jet lag, like doing a sauna like really helps me. And like I don't want to be like the spoiled person like being like, oh yeah, can you like make sure to like book a hotel that like has a sauna in it that's accessible like at least at like 6 a.m. But you can ask that question in Perplexity and like it will find it and it's great. So
now your EA knows if they didn't before.
Exactly. This particular example, it actually took me a while to be like, hey, actually, like, this is the, I care about this a lot more than any other factor. So,
How do you think as the browser change, or like, well, one, do you think we will be still sitting in front of a browser as we know it now in 10 or 20 years time, or the whole raft of new ways of interacting and getting online, getting into the internet? How do you think Perplexity copes with those changes and readies itself to not be disrupted by the next Perplexity-like entrant in the next 5 or 10 years?
I think the form factors of accessing the internet have remained pretty resilient. You know, I mean, we've had tablets enter, but really, like, I don't think we're using tablets in some sort of fundamentally different way than we were as a hybrid of desktops and smartphones. I think the most likely, like, big shift is voice. And that's why we actually have, you know, the ability to use Perplexity, like, yeah, you can run comment just through your voice and like tell it to go do things and take certain actions. And so I think we're kind of future-proofing that. So I think voice is probably going to be the more profound disruption.
Does that mean you have to sign like a smart speaker distribution agreement, do you think?
I think it's even the way we use voice, though. I think the problem with smart speakers has still been like the friction of using them over the smartphone that's already on you. So it's like really good for playing music, is really good for setting timers.
And that's it. Those are two uses.
Yeah. So it's kind of remains to be seen, like if your phone is on you, particularly as they get smarter with like wake words, do you even need, because the speaker, like the other thing is speakers on the phones are getting really good too, you know, so it's, and that's actually an area where they're going to keep improving. There's no, like, I think we haven't hit kind of any kind of maxima there. And so, yeah, I think that's it is surprising that Amazon hasn't done more with Echo, right? They were it's pretty analogous to Siri, in that it was, you know, tremendous kind of early head start. But in some ways, the paradox is for very big established companies, part of what makes AI hard is that the outputs are probabilistic, not deterministic. And that really, and kind of the fear of saying something that's wrong, kind of layered on with like a bureaucracy, that's a pretty like difficult combo to navigate. And I think, you know, it's pretty explanatory as to, you know, the current state of the market.
Do you see the browser kind of play in comment, which is, I will endorse the product. I do, having switched over just in the past week, I do find it's a different way to approach the internet, I think, or it causes me to approach the internet differently. But do you see that as separate from kind of like, there were talks with Samsung about maybe being the personal assistant for the Samsung app? Are those kind of like, are those two separate initiatives? Is that something that you think will come to fruition on the Samsung side? And is it something that...
I wouldn't be good at my job if I start talking about confidential stuff on podcasts. But I can say as a general framework, I think on mobile devices, you need to, we're going to have a mobile version of Comet, absolutely, and that's going to roll out this year as well. But that is necessary, but not sufficient to be a personal assistant. And so you got to, you know, find ways to be more natively integrated into the operating system. And, you know, so I think that's I think on desktop, I think the 80-20 is the browser. And that's really how people, you know, we spend most of our day on our desktops in browsers. And pretty much most apps that you use that are standalone apps also have a equivalent web version. That's not true on mobile. And also on mobile, you know, to the point we were discussing earlier, people are logged into fewer sites with persistent cookies on their mobile browser than they are on their desktop. Largely because there's actually more friction. Like, I mean, people are more annoyed at entering in a password on a smaller screen. And so that's, that's part of the challenge there.
Presumably, to your point about voice, a lot of what we use the screen for, most people, is actually the stuff that agents would abstract away anyway, and just the waste of time, like scrolling through Google Flights or whatever it is. How do you think, maybe this is a long-range question, about what happens, and maybe it's too early to ask, but in a world where people are actually interfacing with a BCI or something like that, like in a very long-range Neuralink world, how does Perplexity fit in there?
I'll not answer your question in the following way. To give you a sense of how much we're focused on the day-to-day, is like one thing I like to say is, I have absolute confidence that there's going to be a top three priority for me 6 months from now that today I have no idea what it is. And I think part of the success Perplexity has been fortunate to experience is we're remarkably agile and adaptive to the constantly shifting tectonic plates of what is foundationally possible, right? And so that's, I'm sure you guys feel this, but it can be a full-time job just to stay on top of all the news coming out on a day-to-day, week-to-week basis, right? In some ways, that's a great use case for...
You need AI agents to do that.
To just like kind of, focus in on what is most pertinent to you. The BCI stuff is super cool. I just think it is, the world is going to revolve so many times until it becomes like practical that we, for us, there's no strategy. I think the thing that we are focused on is the belief that humans are curious and computers are not curious. AI is not curious just because it doesn't, you can train them to be that way, but there will never be an innate desire to be curious, right? Like you can try to approximate that. But the emotional drive of like thinking of the next question, that's like going to be the uniquely human zone. And so we want to foster that. We want to be a tool for people. This isn't a company position, but I have, been pretty vocal for, basically the last 2 years that I don't believe in AGI, largely because I haven't come across a working definition of it that is like consistent. And we constantly see the goalpost shifting. It's like, first it was AGI, then AI, then AGI, now superintelligence. I think to me, all this points to is like, there's still like the core way in which this technology works is you always need a prompt. And that's what's going to come from the human. And so we're in the business of building tools and solutions for people so they can orchestrate all these different AIs with all kinds of other tools and kind of get what they want out of them.
It's interesting you frame this kind of like things you'd ask an executive assistant as like, this is a good proxy, because I definitely use AI systems to like write code for me. And I definitely have never asked an executive assistant to write code. Is Perplexity comfortable sitting like at a different layer than some of the more like code generation or call it, complex work product generation flows that certainly Anthropic and OpenAI and XAI are competing on providing?
I think what we see in the way in which people use Perplexity is actually when they're hit a wall with one of those other tools and they're like, why isn't this working? That's when they go to Perplexity, right? So it's kind of, again, like bringing it back to like the, okay, yeah, the autonomous coding is great, but like I'm stuck and like, help me like figure out what I can do to fix this, right? So that's in practice. So we're not like, there's no plans to kind of build something analogous to either Claude Code or Cursor or anything like that. We have a lot of engineers that use Perplexity and they do a lot of research, in Perplexity, and they do a lot of debugging, but it's not, I wouldn't say that's kind of in our, there's so much to do there. And I think, the executive assistant, it's a useful proxy, but, you could up level it to like chief of staff or, like senior research analyst, right? It's just meant to be, particularly when you think about actions in the real world, I think that's where we want to like, in terms of the research side, I think you're definitely going to, delegate things to Perplexity that you would have, previously had 10 very high paid analysts. And now you can kind of, spin those off. I think in terms of the action piece, and that's kind of where I think of the agentic flow, that's where the EA kind of mental model is more fruitful.
So Perplexity and other companies are, call it, tarnished with this idea that, oh, you're just a wrapper on top of other models. I think there's clearly a lot of product design and also you do your own indexing and stuff. And describe, you know, how does that restrict what you can do, and then how does it enable you to do other things? How do you think about kind of like using underlying API calls and models and kind of what you're doing kind of at the Perplexity like IP level to kind of launch off of that?
The only like real meaningful restriction is you're limited in your ability to do post-training, you know, on private LLMs if you don't have access to the base model, right? And so that's kind of, again, we're fortunate to live in a world where there's many open source models. And, you know, I think something we've believed, you know, for a while, and the world has kind of really come around to this year. At first, kind of when DeepSeek came out in January, that was one validation. And I think the real confirmation was GPT-5 this month. Is that there's no one base model that's going to run away and be, you know, 10 times, 2 times, or even like 30% better than the next best model. And so there's many great labs that are all kind of pushing forward, and that there's not like a leapfrog kind of dynamic to the space we're in. And what, you know, for us, the really strong positioning is, some people like to call it wrapper. I think aggregator is probably a better term. Is like, we get to use all the best models depending on the use case, right? In Comet, at any given query, there's probably like 4 different LLMs at work, you know, and then a bunch of like smaller models, you know, we've done for routing and classifying. And so it's that orchestration of these many things. And you know, the thing that, you know, what we consider the most important long-term tool is search of the world. And the internet is, you know, the best proxy we have for that. And so that's why, you know, one of our core IP investments is building our own search index ranking retrieval system. And one that's optimized not for consumption by humans, but, you know, for that interplay with LLMs. And so that feels like a good investment that we made, and a good bet. And I think the, you know, we continue to, you know, be encouraged by just all of the different models coming out and distillation kind of making it so new entrants can kind of come out of nowhere and have something really competitive, which is awesome.
Just as we're sort of coming up on time, is there anything you could talk to with the company journey and the, your experience, maybe the founding story? Feel free to share any stories that are not in the public domain but are publicly consumable. Anything you like.
We talk a lot about one of our core moats is execution velocity. And I think it's just the, you know, for folks that more is kind of, you know, unsolicited career advice. Yeah, the flip side of when I say like we're adaptive and agile is you need to approach this space with a desire and willingness to have a different set of priorities day to day, week to week, right? I think one of Aravind's superpowers is his willingness to wake up every morning and look at the world with fresh eyes and be willing to disagree with something he said yesterday. And I think having that, both the confidence and humility required to have that mindset has been, you know, integral to Perplexity. And I think that's kind of the people that are successful at the company are the ones that, you know, thrive in an environment where things can change and do change. And that's how we operate internally. And then obviously you need to have a consistent journey for your users, right? And I think this is where we've done a lot of work on brand and design that, you know, it seems like people appreciate. And that's part of what's made us successful. And so, you know, inherently realizing there's like a contradiction between, you know, agility and consistency of the brand and kind of just embracing those trade-offs and doing so as we've gone from, you know, when I joined under 30 people to now 300 people in a very short period of time. That's kind of been that's what we need to keep doing to continue the journey.
I think Aravind's also such an impressive technical leader, and in all conversations with him, just find him so deep and thoughtful. So essentially, our users now just need to know that if they can get over your Comet Guardians into your LinkedIn, and then they can face doing a U-turn every single day to adapt to the changing world, that they have a great, great talent future at Perplexity.
That's a great summary of it. Excited for everyone to get to try Comet. We're going to be expanding access to it looking forward to everyone's feedback.
Great. Thanks for coming on, Dimitri. Really appreciate the conversation.
Thanks, guys.
Okay, so Charlie, you need to get yourself the Comet browser. And thank you all for joining FYI, the Four-Year Innovation Podcast. We'll be back next week. Please like, subscribe, download, offer us comments, reach out to us, follow us on X. We appreciate the ratings because it helps other people discover the podcast. Thank you.
ARC believes that the information presented is accurate and was obtained from sources that ARC believes to be reliable. However, ARC does not guarantee the accuracy or completeness of any information, and such information may be subject to change without notice from ARC. Historical results are not indications of future results. Certain of the statements contained in this podcast may be statements of future expectations and other forward-looking statements that are based on ARC's current views and assumptions and involve known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results, performance, or events to differ materially from those expressed or implied in such statements.